Welcome to my podcast called You Must Be Out of Your Mind. My name is Dr. Don Wood. Everyone has experienced some trauma at times during their life. These traumatic events and experiences create a significant impact on how your mind works on a day-to-day basis. At the same time, creates long-term effects on your emotional and physical health. It will interfere with your ability to stay present and in the moment. After years of research, I used my knowledge of neuroscience to create what I call a memory reset. This memory reset reduces and eliminates the impact of the trauma and allows you to experience peace and clarity. My podcast will share many stories of people experiencing similar symptoms to you and how their lives have been positively impacted by our TIP program. I can't wait to share with you how the impossible is possible and why you must be out of your mind. And there it is.
All right. Well, welcome to another episode of You Must Be Out of Your Mind. And as you know, I always bring on great guests that have a lot to share about similar things that we're doing together. And today is another great example. I have Peggy Von De Plasch, right? And I said that right, didn't I?
Yes, you did. It's amazing. Yes.
All right. Very good. So Peggy's going to talk to us about what she's doing, which has some similarities to what we're doing. So Peggy, can you maybe give us a little bit of background on, I know you are originally like a lot of financial services, but now you're doing this other program. So share a little bit of your history.
Thank you so much. And it's really a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you so much for the invitation. So, and I want to get it out of the way for people listening. Yes, I'm French. That's why you have that huge French accent. And I live in Toronto. I live in Canada. But yes, you're not mistaken. There is a big French accent here.
I just want to ask one question.
Yes.
Leafs or Canadians?
French, from France.
No. Montreal Canadians or Toronto Maple Leafs?
Oh, I don't understand hockey whatsoever. Oh, okay. So, you know, like for me, it's like asking me, you know, what is the best program to go on the moon? I have no idea. So, that's esoteric for me. I guess I should say Maple Leaf because I'm in Toronto. But yes. I lived many years in Montreal, so I guess I can say both. But as you mentioned, yes, I'm from financial services originally, and I actually worked for 20 years as a banker, as a venture capitalist. So I was deep in finance. And since, I would say since last year, I really kind of combine what I've been learning over my 20 years career, but also what I learned with my own professional development. So professional and personal development to kind of build a program that is really to help people get to the next level of success. And I'm really using it based on my own experience. I've been on the self-actualization treadmill like many people who are listening for the last 15 years. And I used many alternative medicine and technology along the way, including microdosing psilocybin, which is what people are usually very excited about. And I built a very comprehensive program that has helped me a lot and has helped a lot of people I've been guiding through. I'm writing a book actually on that. So that's really what I'm doing right now, focusing on this idea of how do you use alternative modalities to get more success in your life and self-actualization, really.
Yeah, and it's a great idea because there's so much. I mean, that's really how I got into it as well. I was looking for an alternative for my daughter, who, like I said, we're originally from Canada. Mm-hmm. And there were no answers for the stuff. She had two autoimmune disorders, and there were no answers for her.
Yeah.
She had Crohn's when she was 14, and then she was diagnosed, and then they took out 24 inches of her intestines over four different operations.
Yeah.
And they said, there's no cure for it. We don't know what causes it. She's just going to have to live and manage this for the rest of her life. She'll eventually end up with a colostomy bag.
Yeah, and that's not very exciting.
Oh, no. And she's an actress and, you know, beautiful, and she's got all this stuff, and all the stress of acting aggravated her Crohn's because it's stress-related. Mm-hmm. And then she ended up with a second autoimmune called idiopathic pulmonary hemosiderosis, mm-hmm. which is where the lungs start to fill up with blood because the immune system starts dumping the iron. That could have been a death sentence.
Yeah. Autoimmune diseases are very interesting because I really like to link physical symptoms with emotional and, you know, maybe more limiting belief type. And very much autoimmune is linked with a disease we all have, which is lack of self-worth and lack of self-love. And mm-hmm. the body is kind of fighting itself. You know, it's a bit like when you have nightmares and you have people trying to kill you. And well, it's the multiple parts of yourself trying to kill yourself. And autoimmune, unfortunately, is the most physical way of seeing that self-hatred or lack of self-love. And I really, really empathize for that. I have a lot of compassion because myself, I've struggled. I still struggle. You know how it is, you go to a different level every time and the same things show up again and again. It's like doing math, grade one, grade two, grade three. Well, self-work for me is that. Yep. No matter the level of consciousness, it keeps coming back, you know? And I realize that, which is why I developed that program, because if you don't have a self-worth, you won't have a success you want.
Right.
Because if you don't think you're worth it, why would you, Don, believe that Peggy should have this or that? Well, Peggy is already not convinced that Peggy should have it, you know? And self-worth, self-love for me is really the cornerstone to everything. And right. To your point, stress aggravates, stress, anxiety, all of that aggravates, you know, the predisposition we might have to not feel enough support for ourselves.
Yeah. And that's what I discovered through all the research, because that unresolved trauma, mm-hmm. particularly childhood trauma,
mm-hmm.
right, is what creates the problem. And so about 80% of the health issues we have right now can be linked back to psychological.
Exactly.
And a lot of people will talk about, well, inflammation, right, is at the root cause of everything. And what I said is somewhat true, not totally true,
mm-hmm.
because inflammation is the response to trauma, whether it's physical or emotional.
It's right? A symptom.
Yes. And
if
inflammation is not the problem.
Exactly.
Inflammation is the problem when it stays on.
Yeah.
Because inflammation is a defense mechanism to protect the system. It's designed to go into a cell danger response to protect the system while it's under attack.
Mm-hmm.
So the inflammation itself is supposed to defend you. The problem is it gets turned on and stays on. Then it becomes the problem.
Yeah.
And exactly. So what they do is, like for my daughter, the only thing that they would do is put her on steroids.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And then it creates other problems on top of that. So you're just hiding kind of the symptoms, but you're creating new challenges. It's never ending. So has she seen great results? What type of result has she seen? And what type of alternative medicine has she been using to, you know, solve the fact that traditional Western medicine was not of any help for her?
Well, that's what I did, is I developed a program to resolve trauma.
Okay,
so once we got the trauma reset, she no longer has the autoimmune disorder.
Ah, that's fabulous.
Fabulous. Right? Yeah. Because what I say is it was a constant loop that was running, continuing mm-hmm. to keep the activation of the inflammation there
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because the subconscious mind doesn't have any connection to time. So if trauma keeps running, the mind sees it as active now.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And so it's going to protect her. And so that was constantly running until we could get that trauma loop stopped. Then we are able to, then naturally the body will heal. It's mm-hmm. stuck in a loop. And so both those things went away. Uh-huh. What here's what's fascinating though, Peggy, is that, and we didn't recognize it until very recently, is that the overuse of the steroids has created polycystic ovarian syndrome. And so she now has PCOS. Which is now a physical thing. It's not psychological.
Yeah.
And so basically, and this is what I found again from more research, all of a sudden she started to put on weight. So it's a hormone issue.
Okay.
Right. And so what happened was, is that this is a few years ago, she had a cyst formed on her ovary. And so she went in, the doctor removes the cyst, and he comes in after the operation and says, well, I'm confused because your chart says you have Crohn's. And she goes, yeah, I have Crohn's. He goes, well, I operated. There's no evidence you have Crohn's. And she goes, no, I haven't had a flare-up in a while. And he goes, but you're not on medication for Crohn's. She goes, no, I don't take medication. And this is what he said to her. He said, well, I hate to tell you this. You've never had Crohn's. And she goes, oh, yeah, I have. I've had four operations. He goes, well, Crohn's doesn't go away. It's either active or suppressed by the medication. And then I explained to him that I believe it was coming from this trauma loop. And he goes, that's impossible. If that was true, you'd have a Nobel Peace Prize. And I said, well, you tell me what Crohn's is then. And he goes, yeah. Crohn's is a lifelong disease with no cure. I said, I disagree. Crohn's is just inflammation. That was the symptom, but they were treating just the symptom, not the Crohn's.
Okay. I have a great story that is aligned with what you just said. When I was 15, I was diagnosed with a brain tumor and something that doesn't go away. And it did go away.
Yeah.
So what did the doctor say? Well, you never had a brain tumor.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, well, maybe you should check at, you know, all of the IRM, all the MRI I did, and, you know, all of the opinions from very renowned doctors. But so it's always the same thing when there is what might be called, you know, a spontaneous remission, even if you and I, we know it's not spontaneous. We worked on that from a different angle. Well, the traditional doctors will tell you, well, it's because it was misdiagnosed. You never had it. It's impossible. And I'm like, we've seen enough evidence of cases like that in many, many areas, many type of disease. I'm just always surprised to hear people not wanting to accept that there are things they cannot explain, or that they can explain, but not with a medication.
Right.
So yeah, I hear you. It's very frustrating. So what's happening with her now is that something that unfortunately she's now dealing with on a regular basis.
Yeah, the only thing now that can really be done is you've got to start eliminating certain things from her diet, because it's like an insulin resistance issue. So if she has any kind of sugar, right, that's going to affect the hormones.
Oh, okay.
So she's just got to do those kinds of things to try to help, you know, alleviate it. So the difference is it's physical, and I work on psychological.
Yeah,
so exactly. I was able to clear the psychological stuff. This is more physical now. And so that's sort of the plan. So it can be managed, but it's a different kind of way to manage it. And who would have known? I wouldn't have known that, right? Yeah. So when my wife said to me, she goes, what's going on? Like, she's always been very thin.
Yeah.
You know, she's an actress, you know, like 115 pounds, you know, and all of a sudden she balloons up 20, 30 pounds.
Yeah.
And it's like, where did that come from? So again, I go back and so they just tell us, you know, we don't know nothing, you know, we can't figure it out. And from the research, I came back and said, have her tested for polycystic, right, ovarian syndrome. And so they don't test it until we insist on it. And then they go, oh, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't have discovered it.
But the challenge that you're qualified to look, most people first will not question a diagnosis from authority figures. That's the first problem. That's the first problem. The second problem, not everyone is capable of, you know, reading, understanding, and coming to a conclusion that is actually accurate. So it leaves 99% of the population at the mercy of this misdiagnosis or medical error, actually. And the challenge as well with your daughter is that, to your point, it was likely created by a medication that was given to her in another context. You don't have any doctor who would want to acknowledge that, because it's too much insurance trouble, it's too much risk. So you have this big system you're dealing with.
Yep. And it's very frustrating, because it's not that they're not smart people, they are, and it's not that they're not caring, but they've been trained one way.
Exactly.
So if all the books that you have read have told you that this is the way to solve a problem, and then somebody comes along and you've spent all that time learning this system, they're reluctant to want to switch it because it goes against what they've been taught. Yeah. And like, for example, this doctor who told me it's impossible to do what I did, right? It's not that he's not smart.
Yeah.
It's just that it flies in the face of his education.
Exactly.
That's very hard to admit that what I may have learned may not have been 100% accurate.
And when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Exactly. Yep. And so I see it all the time. So definitely if people have autoimmune, I'm saying that I'm believing that in most cases, it's coming from unresolved trauma. And if you don't resolve the trauma, the autoimmune. So I had a client who came in, and five sisters living in a family with a father who's a pastor, but he was on the outside to the world, this great man and such a family guy. Inside the home, terror. So all five sisters ended up with Hashimoto's, right? And that's where it was coming from, was again, all of that trauma.
Yeah.
So once we get the trauma resolved, again, she goes back in for her testing. And they said, we're not seeing the Hashimoto's. What are you doing? It makes no sense to them. What did you do? Right. She goes, I just went and saw this doctor, and we did the trauma therapy program. And they're like, well, that can't be possible. They can't imagine how that's possible. But the mind and body, as you know, are designed to heal.
Exactly.
So when people come into me and they say, I have anxiety, I have depression, whatever they're talking about, I said, no, you don't. That's a symptom of the problem.
Exactly.
It's not the problem. So let's get to the root of the problem, and the symptom will go away. But they will treat the anxiety. They'll treat the depression.
Yeah.
And what I say is, depression is a function of the brain, not a dysfunction. The brain is shutting down because of this unresolved trauma that it can't fix.
Yeah.
So in order to protect you, it goes into a protective shutdown mode, right? Resolve the trauma, the depression will lift.
Exactly. And, you know, it's very, very interesting, because the mind-body connection is something that is quite well known. I would say, even if you speak with traditional doctors, most of them will agree there is a mind-body connection. Placebo effect is the best example of that. But what I still don't understand is, okay, so why isn't it used? And if you know that, I mean, 70%, I think that's the statistics, of people have unresolved trauma. And you know that the mind influences the body, all this chronic disease. Well, there's, I mean, a strong correlation and a very high probability that it's coming from that. But at the same time, not looked at all. You're going to get an antidepressant. You're going to have an anti-anxiety drug that you're supposed to take for the next 25 years, you know? So I've never, ever been on medications, because I don't believe in it. And not from a weird Packer type mentality.
Oh,
I just don't think it's treating the root cause of a problem. That's why I'm not interested, because it's not that I don't want to see my depression. It's that I know that my depression is not going to be solved with antidepressants.
No.
It's going to be solved with internal work, you know? And it's something that people still look at me like, oh my God, she's crazy. But I'm like, okay, I think I'm the one here who's the most sane person. You're crazy for staying for 25 years on medication, doing the same thing over and over again, is the definition of insanity.
Are you tired of dealing with stress, anxiety, panic attacks, depression, even feeling broken? Have traumatic events and experiences in your life created post-traumatic stress for you? Perhaps you're an athlete, an executive, trying to reach that next level of performance. Well, there's nothing wrong with you, and there's nothing wrong with your mind. Your mind is dealing with some glitches and error messages as a result of these traumatic events or disturbing events earlier in your life. It's interfering with your ability to stay present, because the memory keeps on looping, activating your nervous system. I've helped thousands of people deal with anxiety, panic attacks, depression,
feeling that sense of brokenness? We can clear that in as little as 4 hours. Check out our website, inspiredperformanceinstitute.com, and check out some of the stories and testimonials. Some of these may relate to what you've experienced in your life, and we look forward to helping you reach your next level of performance. And there it is.
Yes. But the problem is they've got an expert, right, who's very well educated, and they're telling them that this is the solution. Yeah. I'll have people come in and they'll say, I've got really bad anxiety. And I say, are you taking medication? Yes, I'm on anti-anxiety meds. And how is your anxiety? It's really bad. Yeah. And I'm like, did you just hear what you told me? Your anxiety is really bad and you're on medications. How is the medication working for
working.
You?
Working, yeah.
And here's what I get, Peggy.
Could be worse.
Worse if I didn't take it. I'm like, okay. All right. So, but that's what they've been told.
Yeah.
So what I look at is, why are you anxious? What is creating the anxiety? The mind does everything for a purpose. It's never trying. When people come in and say, I sabotage myself, I go, it's impossible. The brain is not capable of sabotage. It's a survival tool. It will always keep you alive. It will figure out a way to avoid danger, right? And so people say, yeah, but I'm on this really good path. Everything's going really well. And then I go and do something stupid, right? It's, well, because your mind was moving you away from what it perceived was a dangerous situation.
Exactly, exactly.
That's not sabotage.
Yeah. It's self-love. Yes. It's just that it's misguided self-love.
It's, yeah.
Because the program your mind built when you was 3 or 5 years old was very simple and at the time seemed like a great idea. When you're 45, not so much. That's the big challenge.
I talk about it's like the military, it's faulty intelligence. The faulty intelligence got built and you follow the faulty intelligence because it has to be accurate. I've lived with this my entire life. This is the intelligence I have, right? The information that I got fed. But what I said is, imagine, would you feed military intelligence to a four-year-old and then when they became a general say, I want you to use what you learned when you were four? I'll guarantee you they misinterpreted it.
Exactly.
They're a four-year-old. They don't have enough life experience to understand this intelligence that they're getting. So they put their own meaning on it, just like you're talking about with beliefs. What does this mean about me and my safety? Right? It means, and you know, I'm not loved. I'm not safe. I'm not valuable. Right?
Yeah.
So you take a parent who's abusive to their child. What are they teaching their child? Right? We don't love you. We don't value you. Why would you beat your child or why would you sexually abuse your child if they had value? That's what a child hears.
Yeah.
And then they grow up with that belief.
Well, and you don't even have to go to such extreme cases.
Right.
Even, you know, like someone, I'm a Gen X, I was born in the 70s. And I mean, these were a very different time to raise kids, you know? And I'm coming from a small town, north of France, very industrial, very blue collar. You know, like things were not assessed the same way. You were very authoritative with your kid because that's what a good parent was. It was not about the kid, it was about the parent.
Yes.
And on top of that, there was a very, very strong impact from religion. So, you know, like you add layer and layer of things and you end up with traumas that are not even coming from situations like you mentioned that maybe are almost obvious, you know, that there's going to be trauma if you're abused physically and sexually, but things where it's constant invalidation, constant neglect, not because people want that, but it's because that we were told that that's what makes good children.
Yes.
And again, a faulty recipe. Yep. And then you have entire generation of people who actually, unfortunately, use their own education and childhood as the benchmark for their own kids. And you're like, well, I don't know, you know, like maybe your parents were not that enlightened. So if you do just a little bit better, it's still not going to be enough, you know?
Yeah. I just wrote my fourth book and I called it Don't Mess With My DNA.
Mm-hmm.
because what people don't understand is that trauma in childhood actually affects the way the DNA is read and transcribed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then it will become an epigenetic factor that will add on to the next generation.
Yeah.
And so, but the good news is it can be healed and it can be fixed.
Yeah.
You need to get to the root cause to do that, not manage it. If you manage it, you're not fixing it.
Oh, you know, this idea of management, you know, stress management, anxiety management, or, you know, whatever type of management, I find is so disingenuous. Mm-hmm. Because it's like telling me, well, listen, Peggy, you're going to live with having to carry this 20-pound bag in your bag for the rest of your life. And, you know, so you're going to have to learn to run with it. You're going to have to sleep with it. You're going to have to take your shower with it. So let's manage that. And I'm like, no, let's learn to remove the blocks, you know, the rocks from the bag. And let's make that 20 pounds, whatever the number was, zero or at least half or a quarter. I'm not interested in managing, carrying things that I don't have to.
Exactly. Why would you want to manage it? Fix it, right?
Exactly.
It's like if you went into your dentist and you say, I have a toothache, and he takes out a needle, he sticks it in into your gum and freezes it. Says, do you feel the pain now? No. We're good.
Bye. See you next week.
You're going to be back in tomorrow going, my pain's back. Oh, no problem. We'll keep injecting you with pain medication so that you don't feel it. You would find another dentist.
And the management is only eat ice cream or only, you know, like eat on the other side of your mouth or all these things that if you put it that way, people are like, are you insane? Of course, I'm not doing that. But we do that with mental health all the time. Because it's less tangible. And that's also why we see, unfortunately, that there has been a lot of underinvestments in mental health, because it's more difficult to do a business case. And, you know, from a finance background, you know, you want to know, okay, if I put $1, I'm going to get 10. Well, here it's difficult to say if you pull that lever, this one's going to come systematically. And because mental health was more difficult to assess in terms of results, hence in terms of ROI for pharmaceutical companies. Well, they went in the body direction. And because it's aligned with the way we see wellness, disease, healthcare in the West, it makes a lot of sense. In the East, it's a very different approach, as you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's more money in the treatment than there is in the cure.
Exactly. Of course.
Keep somebody on a medication for 25 years, that's very, very valuable.
Recurring revenue.
But if you fix it, then you don't have the problem anymore.
And you lost your client.
You lost your client. Yeah. And it's sort of what I do. A lot of people say, well, you know, I can get rid of post-traumatic stress, right? In as little as 4 hours. And they'll say, but that's not a very good business model. Because you never, and I said, I don't need to see the client again. Yeah. We're going to fix it. There's lots of people out there that have the problem. And we were just sort of talking about this a little bit before, Peggy, when we were saying about after COVID, that I believe there's a tsunami of mental health issues coming down the road, right? Okay. And we're starting to see it. I mentioned about the road rage when I was up there. I was just like, there's one example, right? That people are very, very angry. And I think as more and more information comes out about that we really didn't need to shut the world down, that we could have done it differently.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we're going to see. So if you lost your home or lost your business or lost your job, right, that anger is going to show up.
Yeah.
And that's what I think what we're seeing.
Or in Canada, you know, like I know people who lost parents, couldn't even see them, you know, at the old person's home, couldn't see them at the hospital, people who couldn't have disease like cancer detected because they couldn't access the hospital for 2-3 years, then obviously, well, 2-3 years without, you know, a diagnosis, well, aggravates the symptoms. So there are many, many angles to which people have been affected. And I'm not even talking about some people having physical effects from the vaccine by itself.
Starting to see that now.
Which is another level where I'm like, okay, I got 3 shots. I got three shots, and after the second shot, I got a huge tumor in my breast, very large. And the doctor said, "Oh, it's okay. It's a COVID vaccine." I'm like, "Well, I don't know if okay is really the correct word, you know." And I know, again, unfortunately, when you see things like that, people tend to think, "Oh, you're delusional, you're this, you're that." But I mean, I can show you. It was not before. It's there. And even the doctor told me, "Well, that's likely to be the case because they keep seeing cases like that."
Yes, we're seeing a lot of issues, you know, heart issues, a lot of stuff that are going on. I never took the vaccine. And yeah. The reason I didn't is because I've been healthy all my life.
Mm-hmm. I had no choice if I wanted to, you know, in Canada, unfortunately, we were extremely, extremely authoritative when it comes to the vaccine. And if you had to go even to government building, and I'm on the board of a government agency, even for me to go to see my parents in France, come back, to go to a restaurant, so I don't take vaccine usually. I waited really last minute to take it. And now I'm looking at that and I'm like, really, maybe I should have stuck with my guns and wait 2 years. It's just that when you're in the moment, you don't know if it's a 2 year or 20 year story. And here you are stuck. You couldn't do anything without your paper, without your vaccine.
And the fear that was there, right, about I'm going to die if I don't get it. And they're telling you, you're going to die.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that never made sense to me, Peggy, is that people would say to me, "You didn't get vaccinated?" I say, "No." They said, "Well, that's irresponsible because you're now a threat to everybody else." And I said, "Did you get a vaccine?" "Yes, I got the vaccine."
But you can still.
How can I hurt you? If you believe the vaccine is protecting you, right? Yeah. And yet you're afraid I don't have it, that I could infect you. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And you can still carry it anyway, even with the vaccine. Yeah. So, you know, nothing
makes any sense.
It was not making any sense. And to be fair, I was very lucky because I've never been afraid of, you know, catching it, dying, da 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 da. So that was really not one of the challenge for me. But I understand for some people it was. But here you had tremendous peer pressure.
Oh, yeah.
If you were to say you were not vaccinated, so first people were assuming that you were, you know, a lunatic, you know, like.
That's exactly the word I was going to use.
Okay, a lunatic, and also that it was not socially acceptable, you're not supporting the society, and all these old people were going to die because of you. And I'm like, well, we can stay at their home, you know, right. Like if they're such in a poor health. You know, like it's not me who should be stuck in my own. So it was just insane. So I'm not surprised that you see that anger coming up from many, many, and we're talking about Canadian, very passive aggressive type of culture. So there is tremendous repressed anger to be tapped on at will.
Yeah. And we, like I said, I saw it when I was just there a few weeks ago. Which was very different for me. And I noticed it very quickly. But, you know, like I said, I think of all the people who now, when they start, if this information starts to come out, that not everybody needed it, that its effectiveness may not be that that strong, then we're going to really see problems. And so, I think that's the tsunami of mental health issues we're going to have.
Yeah.
You know, especially with all these people thinking that they took their kids out of school, they homeschooled them, they didn't get a good education. Now they're behind in reading, they're behind in all of their, you know, skills, right?
Yeah.
That's going to make parents angry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, kids didn't get, you know, their prom. I know it sounds ridiculous, but when you're a kid, it's important for you.
Social, you know? Like, so important.
Yeah,
right.
Socialization. Yeah.
Even for the young children, they recognize facial recognition. That's how they determine whether they're safe.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
So they're learning how to interpret people's body language and all of that. They were shut out from that.
Yeah.
So a very formative development time for them to learn social skills was shut down.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, you know, and I think, so what I really like with psychedelics, which I've been using, and, you know, and is really what we discuss is the ability to use that more as a cure than as a management system. And I think that's the big value of psychedelics. And I'm using psilocybin, which is the mushrooms. So first, it's natural. So I like that no one is tampering with whatever. But also, the goal for me is really move on. And not stay stuck in the same loop, you know. And I find that microdosing psilocybin, which I combine with tapping meditation, which I absolutely love, guided meditation, visualization, journaling, this type of thing, have been extremely, extremely helpful. I know some people use psychedelics on their own as just a way to release trauma, limiting belief, emotional wounds. I have to say that has not really been my case. I don't find the medicine find the problem and solve it. I think you still need to guide it and work with it. But that has been extremely, extremely valuable. I grew by leaps and bounds. Right. Really, I could really see, you know, like the changes. And because I've been on that path for a number of years, I could see the exponential growth versus a very slow burn, linear growth I have seen in the past. And I think we can make the parallel between maybe what you are doing with someone doing a psychotherapy.
Right.
And what I used to do with combining with microdosing. It's a bit on steroids. So what you're doing could be compared to very slow burn, I guess. And what I was doing was compared to that slow burn that is now on steroids. So, you know, at the end of the day, like you, like the people you're helping, if I can get relief in 4 hours, in a month, in 3 months, or if I can go faster, bigger, higher, well, why would I want to go slow and painful and, you know, like all these things? I just don't get it, you know, just because we've always done that. Well, good for you. I don't care. I'm not interested by that.
Well, when I first developed the program, that's what I looked at is I said, okay, how is the brain responding to trauma? Right. And what I realized is that it's basically running a video loop.
Mm-hmm.
So it's looking at memory in real time. And here's a great way to explain it. This is what I found in some of my research, is that I believe a lot of it is coming from the visual memory, right? So when we do brain mapping on people to sort of see what's going on with the brain, when people have post-traumatic stress, for example, the occipital lobe at the back, the O1, O2 areas of the brain are lit up, which means they're viewing something.
Exactly.
And they're viewing memory. When we take them through our program, we see that area calm down. Now, here's what's fascinating, what I found in the research, is that schizophrenia, which is the most extreme form of response to trauma, right? The brain becomes completely disorganized.
Yeah.
And so it can't handle it. So it becomes sort of out of balance. Mm-hmm. There's never been a documented case in history of a person who had schizophrenia that was born blind.
Okay. So that is very interesting.
That's
exactly the type of thing that I love. You know, instead of always looking at the same, you know, you need creativity.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you're talking about. It's connecting dots that have never been looked at because it doesn't make sense.
And that's what I was doing. And I kept looking at these things saying, there is a solution to it. What we have to do is reset. Like when your computer gets stuck, what do? We shut it off and restart.
Yeah, exactly.
What I do in 4 hours is I spend the first 2 hours on all the science and education. We haven't even talked about trauma. Mm-hmm. And by the time we get to starting to talk about the trauma, I say, I need 2 or 3 events in your lifetime that have been disturbing, traumatic. I'm looking for a 60-second to 2-minute highlight reel, a movie trailer.
Yeah.
Don't need a lot of detail. In fact, I don't even need you to tell me what the trauma is. Your brain knows what it is.
Yeah.
And all I have to do is get your brain to reset it. And so the process that I use allows the mind to take this data and rerun it, right? And take the intensity out of it. So we don't eliminate the memory. So I've worked with all kinds of people who, after we're finished, have no problem talking about the trauma without an emotion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because their mind's no longer feeling threatened or feeling fear, right? Because we've reset it. It's just data now, right?
So I have a question for you. What I see very often is multiple of traumas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kind of built on each other. Yep. So, yes, you can have traumas with a big T combined with traumas with a small T, if I can say that. So do you see removing all the roots of all these events? Yes, huh? That's what you do.
Once we work on two or three, the thalamus, which is the relay center in the brain that's taking all the data, it continues to run the trauma, even mm-hmm. when you go to sleep. So once we get it started, we're priming the pump with the two or three events. It continues to process the trauma. So we don't need to do every trauma. Mm-hmm. So I've worked with people, they'll say, well, do I have to go through every one? And I go, no. Yeah. Give me two or three, right? Yeah. Your system's designed to reset. So mm-hmm. we're basically defragging the computer. I use computer analogies all the time. And when I talk about small T trauma, my second book I wrote is on that. I call them emotional concussions. It's an emotional concussion.
I love that. Yeah.
Right? So what happened? You got bumped, a teacher, a coach, or somebody hurt your feelings or said something. It wouldn't get defined as a big T trauma, but it still has an effect on a child. Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you have multiple concussion, obviously,
it's going to show up somewhere.
You're more sensitive.
Yes.
And it can create big challenges over time. So, yeah, I love that idea of concussion versus trauma. That's amazing.
Yeah, so it's really good. So what does a process look like if somebody was using, if you're consulting them and saying, here's what I want you to do, what does that look like?
So I built it around 90 days, and it's really something that people can do at home. So it's a self-guided type of program, because I do believe sincerely in people having power in their own hands. You know, we were criticizing the expert. I don't want to be an expert. I want people to have a recipe and to be doing it themselves. So they don't need me. They can do that. And so it's really going week after week through different type of exercise, introducing the microdosing, introducing typing. So we work on a lot of issues like belief around self-worth. Belief around, you know, change is scary. Belief around, you know, if I shine, I'm sure you have a lot of that. If I shine, I'm not safe. I'm in danger. And it's always linked with a safety mechanism at some point, you know, because your brain wants you to stay alive. Yes. So, you know, maybe it's going to think that, oh, if you don't change, well, you're going to be safe. So you stay in your little box. That's what people think. They self-sabotage themselves. It's not self-sabotaging. It's going back to that box that your mind has defined as safe and familiar.
Yep.
So you want to make sure, well, there is changes. So it is really, I would say, tools I use myself that has helped me a lot. The difference maybe with what you're doing is that I realize that, because I've seen it in me, that every new level of consciousness, deconditioning, you know, call it that way, things tend to come back, you know, as I evolve, things come back in a different shape. So I have not seen in my experience becoming done and done, if I say that. So that's probably the difference with you. It's probably a bit longer than what you're saying for hours, but it's also self-processed, so people can do it at their own rhythm, all of that. So I would almost see the beauty of doing what you're doing and what I'm doing together.
Sure.
Where you can work on big traumas or things like that, and then you can still build a bit more of this self-confidence, self-esteem, you know, focusing on your success, what is the vision of success, the intention, and things like that. So I really like this you know, we all have a different approach based on our own experience at the end of the day. And for you, it came from dealing with big challenges with your daughter. So yes. It was very binary, zero or one. It needed to be solved. Right. For me, if I look at my life, it's okay. If my self-worth on the scale of 0 to 10 is a 2, I get to a 4, great. I get to a 6, get to an 8, amazing. So there is a bit more of a gradual approach to that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So you had some trauma when you were younger. Is that what happened with you as well?
Well, I had, you know, a lot of concussions and a lot of trauma. Mm-hmm. So all of that kind of, it's a bit challenging because you pull a thread and you have like 5 things that come. So it has been a bit difficult to find the angle. So I work a bit on all of them at the same time in order to unravel it. But it's not like, okay. So I'll take an example. My brother passed away in an accident when I was young. And so you can use that. Okay, that's a big T trauma. We can work on that, and that's going to, I'm sure, be helpful. It's just that it's just one of so many that, and I was kind of almost 17. So we're past the first 7 years where it's really the most impactful. So sometimes a concussion at 5 is more important than a trauma at 17.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you look at what could seem like a big rock, it's actually probably not the big rock.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's later, as I'm sure you see all the time.
Well, yeah, I see it all the time. So I worked with some of the Boston Marathon bombing survivors. Mm-hmm. One lady in particular who had very severe post-traumatic stress. 5.5 years later, she comes in and, you know, she has terror nightmares every night. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I take her through the program. We clear the post-traumatic stress. She says, I can't believe that you could do that fast. My nightmares have ended. But she says, you know what the most valuable part of the whole program was? She goes, I didn't realize my childhood trauma was bigger.
Exactly. And that was just reactivating.
I thought the Boston Marathon bombing was my reason to be here.
Exactly.
It was really healing the other trauma first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's very difficult because most of us, we have been raised also in that idea that if you're talking about childhood trauma, first, you're weak. Second, you know who you are to complain. Many people have a life way more difficult than, you know, all these things that make you. I know that it took me a long, long time to even look at that because, like, well, I don't want to accuse my parents. And it's two different things. You know, it took me a very long time to realize that I can have perceived and experienced trauma for very benign things, you know? But very often, I think there is a barrier to address childhood trauma in our society, unless it's very obvious, as you mentioned, with case of abuse, because there is also a bit of a loyalty or a fidelity to our caregiver, and there is a bit of this sense of I'm betraying them and I'm weak.
Well, here's a great example. I had a lady, she's in her mid-30s, had a lot of anger towards her parents on a particular issue. She goes, overall, I think they were good parents, but she says, there's one particular time I still can't get over and I'm still angry at them. And so what she explained to me is, she has two sisters, an older sister and a younger sister. So she was about 4 or 5 when her parents went out for the night and hired a babysitter that had never babysat them before. It was a male. And so her 10-year-old sister, right, she's about 4 or 5, and then they have like a pretty much less than a 1-year-old. And so anyway, the babysitter, this male, was going to sexually assault the 10-year-old. Now, the 10-year-old was smart enough to say, listen, don't do this in front of my sisters. Let me put them away, right? And so she snuck them all into the bathroom and locked the door. So he couldn't get in, right? So he was pounding on the door, threatening them, and they stayed in there. And she says, and then eventually her parents didn't go out for long, but she says they came back. And what she said was, when they came back, this guy bolted real quick, right? She said, when we came out, we told my parents what happened. And she goes, but they didn't believe us. And I said, so how do you know they didn't believe you? She says, well, nobody ever talked about it again. She says it was done. And she goes, and nobody ever said anything about it. It was like swept under the carpet. My parents didn't believe us and they did nothing about it. So when I have them in a very, very relaxed, calm, safe state after the 2 hours of the science, I said to her, I said, now I wasn't there. I says, however, is it possible that your parents did do something, but you're five?
You don't know. Yeah.
They never told you that they got this guy arrested.
They called the police.
Because they're not going to bring a five-year-old into that. They don't want to traumatize you more.
Yeah.
That had never occurred to her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when she's in this safe place, now her mind can start to process it differently. Mm-hmm. What she thought was a betrayal. I said, did he ever babysit you again? No. And he used to work where his dad, where her dad worked. I said, do you ever see him at your dad's work again? No. Right? So maybe it's possible they did something, but a five-year-old would never be brought in on that. That shifted for her. The perception that her parents didn't care about them, didn't believe them, shifted to maybe they did, never considered that. And that starts the healing process.
Yeah, it's, you know, I love these powerful questions because you're kind of feeding, what if I'm wrong?
Right.
What if I, you know, assessed it the wrong way? What if I perceived it the wrong way? And now the program is kind of bugging, you know, and now the software is ready to be upgraded to stay on the computer conversation, you know, and
that's what I use.
That's, and you don't necessarily have to talk about it for 200 hours at an early rate of 500 or whatever early rate for the next 10 years, you know, like, so, yeah.
So, but that's the whole idea, is to get them into a state that their mind is receptive to new information, which is what you're doing with their microdosing.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening is then the brain starts to go, all right, I'm not on defense right now.
Exactly.
What are you talking about? All right. Exactly. And the mind can start to look at it differently. But if you're being chased by a lion, right, the mind is not going to want to start doing any maintenance.
Exactly.
And the problem is with traditional therapy, you go in and speak to them for 45 minutes, maybe an hour. The mind is not receptive to change because it's feeling still unsafe because you're talking about what happened to them.
And you keep re-traumatizing yourself and reinforcing the same story.
Of course. By the time I get them to the, before we've even talked about trauma, they're already so chilled. So I'm literally doing verbal psychedelics.
Exactly. Right. You know, and that's why I was telling you, I think psychedelics alone is not enough because it's as if you were just talking about the science and then you would say, oh, thank you. Goodbye.
Right.
You need the next step. You need that step where you're like, well, is it true that you're not worthy? Is it really, really true? Or is it, you know, an illusion that you believed for very long?
Well, that's one of the things I said with her parents, as I said, is there any other evidence to support the fact that they didn't care about you and love you? Were they physically abusive? Were they sexually abusive? No. So none of the other evidence, right? If we had to put your parents on trial for that accusation, could you convict them based on all the other evidence you have about your parents? No. Right? So you basically got some disinformation because you're five and it stuck. So let's start looking at it in another way from a different angle, right? And so that shifts so many people. That's just one example. But, you know, but again, a lot of times what I do is just reset the memory and sort of take it at a high definition into a very low definition file. And the mind stops calling for actions for it because it's over.
Yeah, I loved that process of, you know, like rewinding, changing the music, changing the color, you know, scrambling things, you know, because one thing, and I know we're probably out of time, but on one end, we can look at our mind-body connection at something that might trick us and that can be, I'm air quoting, arming us. But if you use the same process the other way around, thinking, well, or can I harness it to use it to my benefit.
Yes.
So, and that's exactly what you and I are looking at. It's like, okay, how can I use that to deprogram and reprogram? Yep. Because we all know that as human beings, we get conditioned. Well, why don't we use that process to condition us with the great stuff?
We're using the same tools, right?
Same tools.
Put it to our benefit. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, Peggy, this has been fabulous. I've enjoyed
thank
our
so
time
much.
And
me
learning
too.
What you do as well. And thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much.
And everybody watching, thank you for listening to another episode of You Must Be Out of Your Mind.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Don.
Take care.
Bye-bye.